Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. As young professionals ourselves, we're constantly striving to connect and uplift young people in the Toledo community. Our podcast is featuring young entrepreneurs and professionals in the area from all different industries and walks of life who are making an impact in Toledo.
We're excited to have our guests discuss their background, their education and training, and give any advice for other young professionals like us. We're also going to take a look at varying pop culture trends among Gen Zers like ourselves and discuss or debunk them, maybe even a little Roman Empire.
You know what I've been thinking about?
What, girl?
I have been thinking about being more environmentally conscious.
So true. Isn't the earth like dying?
Let's get real serious here on the Come Up, all right?
Okay.
The earth is dying.
Okay.
And we need to take steps as Gen Zers. I know we're starting strong here, you guys. For me, one thing that I like to do to really, you know, hone in on that conscientiousness is I like to go through my recycling and then look at my friends' recyclings and make sure that there aren't any contaminants in there. Because,
sure.
You know, one bad piece can ruin the entire
batch.
The whole batch. And then all that effort was for naught. All that cleaning out the cans and cleaning out all your stuff. What was it for?
Right.
And I what know. Do you do, girl?
I know thrifting is big, but it is great, a good way to avoid all the fast fashion.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think thrifting is a really fun way. Like, you can enjoy it with your friends while also being environmentally conscious. Look at you,
Libs. We love that.
Today's guest knows a thing or two about environmental consciousness. Today, we have Ellie Schiappa.
What's going on?
Hey, guys.
How are you?
I'm good.
We're so excited to just be some girls yapping today.
Yeah. Stoked to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, what's so interesting, too, is Libby and I have kind of gone through all the guests we've had so far, and we haven't had anybody remotely close to your industry, so we're really excited to dive deep into all things environmental conservation, babe.
Yeah.
It's great. So first, you know, start with the basics. Give us the tea, the background, how you ended up in the area, where you went to school. Give us the scoop.
Okay, this is a long story, so I hope you have, like, a map ready.
Yes. I will make a diagram.
So I grew up in Western Pennsylvania in a small town about an hour north from Pittsburgh. I know everybody from Western Pennsylvania usually says that, but about halfway between Pittsburgh and Erie is a small town, and I was, like, so ready to get out of there when I graduated from high school, and I was looking four colleges literally anywhere but Pennsylvania.
Real.
But I ended up at Slippery Rock University, which is a small university, again, in Western Pennsylvania, literally 7 miles from where I grew up. And, you know, I was looking for schools, trying to figure out what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go, but I had no idea what I wanted to major in.
Right.
So I figured, why not go somewhere close while I try to figure it out? I had full intentions of going for 2 years, getting my liberal studies out of the way, and then transferring. Mm-hmm. The transfer never happened. I stayed there for the 4 years.
Okay, Slippery Rock.
Go Rock, baby. and I'm so happy I did. Like, I had such an amazing experience. I made amazing friends. I got to take advantage of a lot of study abroad opportunities through the university. And got to travel both through the school and then also solo, which was just, like, the best thing that I could have possibly done for myself and for where I am today. So at Slippery Rock, I majored in environmental geography, environmental studies, and sustainability. So environmental studies and sustainability was my concentration, but my degree is actually in geography, which
Ooh,
is
cool. Interesting.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Yeah, go geographers. There's not a lot of us out there in the world or in the wild, but it's cool.
Few but mighty.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I did.
So, yeah, talk a little bit about kind of what that major entailed. Like, what did you have to study? What was kind of your thought process behind deciding on that?
Yeah, so geography is essentially the study of spatial patterns. So I like to joke I made a lot of maps in undergrad, but I did. I took cartography classes and then geography information system classes, or GIS, so how to make maps, you know, using a online software.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also took some human cultural geography courses, and that's what the courses that I loved the best. So that was really studying spatial patterns among humans and in human culture. So
that's really interesting.
Yeah. So I was really on like the human side of geography and in the environmental studies world.
For sure.
Yeah. I studied sociology. So that like seems like there'd be some connections there.
Yeah. And honestly, I had no idea that was even a piece of environmental work. Right. So growing up, both my parents are environmental scientists. My dad is a geologist. My mom is a geologist paleontologist. So my
whole Ross Geller. Sorry, Friends reference had to.
So growing up, my whole life was centered around like the physical features of the earth and environmental science related things. So like every family vacation we would go on, we would have to, it was focused on whatever physical feature was present in that space. So either be like, let's go look at these volcanoes, or let's go look at these glaciers, or we could be on a road trip and my parents would just pull over on the side of the highway to look at an outcrop of rocks. And so and at the dinner table, it was all about rocks and minerals. And okay, that might sound kind of cool. And like in hindsight, it was really interesting. But growing up, it would just go in one ear and out the other. So environmental work to me was so boring.
Fair.
And I didn't want anything to do with it.
Sure.
But in undergrad, I was dabbling in different majors, trying to figure it out. I was like a communications major. I tried a public health. Like I was trying all of the things. And then my sophomore year, I had just come back from a semester off. I took a semester off and just traveled for a bit to just get some perspective on life. I was just really burned out of school and, again, of where I was living. And I was sitting in an environmental problems class. And I'll always remember, like, sitting in the auditorium that the course was in and realizing that there was so much more to environmental work than the physical science side of things, and that I was really passionate about it. And so it was just kind of like a really like eye-opening moment in that course of, oh, there's so much more work that could be done. I'm so passionate about this information and this topic. So why am I fighting against it for kind of no reason? Like, you know, I was just being stubborn, really.
No, I get that, though. I mean, I feel like when your parents do something, sometimes you kind of want to rebel against it. I mean, trust me, going into journalism was a hard pill to swallow, man. Like, I did not want to be little mini Chris, but I had to, so I get it. But, you know, I think that's so interesting, too, how your course has kind of shaped what you wanted to do with that. And it's not like you're doing exactly the same thing. You're striking out in your own different way, which is really nice.
For sure. So what got you interested then in the conservation sides of things, which is what you're doing now?
Yeah. So originally when I first declared environmental studies, I was also like in my communications classes. So upon graduation, I had full intentions of actually going into environmental communication, growing up with environmentalists as parents, but then living in a very small town, I really saw kind of that gap between communication from scientists to the general public. So I really wanted to go into environmental or science communication. But after I graduated, I moved to Vermont and I served in AmeriCorps for 2 years, doing a bunch of different things. I had 2 terms of service. The first year was with the Department of Environmental Conservation. And there I was doing some environmental communications work and then also some environmental justice work. But then my second term, I served with the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board partially. And then another part of my service, I was with the Vermont River Conservancy and the Friends of the Winooski River. And working with those two organizations was the first time I got a taste of conservation work. And I was actually on the ground working with community members, landowners, and other just passionate individuals working on conservation and working with, you know, different elements of conservation. So whether that be some restorations or river protection. So working in that AmeriCorps service was really what introduced me to this idea of what conservation and preservation of land even meant. I had no idea kind of before that. And so that's what really sparked me moving into that direction. And it created more questions. I went to grad school. And now here we are actually working in conservation in the field.
Yeah. I mean, talk a little bit about grad school, too. I mean, give us some insight on what you did there and where you went and all of that.
Yeah. So after AmeriCorps, if you don't know what AmeriCorps is, it's essentially Peace Corps, but the domestic version. So we're placed with organizations that are in need of some more capacity or just more help on mm-hmm. the ground. So I was, after that, I mean, they're temporary positions, you know, they're 11 months of service and then you're looking for the next thing. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was so not ready to get a big girl job at all. And so what was the natural next step? Grad school.
Real.
And so I went to Michigan State and got my master's of science in community sustainability. And the program was just really awesome. It was an interdisciplinary degree. So the people and the other students that were in the program did a variety of things. So there was conservation through Parks and Rec. So my advisor was a Parks and Recreation professor. And so my research was based in Parks and Rec. But then there was other students that were focused on like food security, agriculture, some resilience work, socioeconomic work. Wow. So they were really focused on this idea of sustainability and this all-encompassing idea of sustainability. So not just the environmental leg, but nice. Everything else that makes a community sustainable.
Yeah, so you're really exposed to like a lot of different perspectives then.
Yeah, it was super cool. And it was also a super international program. So like there was literally people from all over the United States, all over the world, just kind of there studying about basically how to make the world a better place.
Right, that sounds like a great experience.
Yeah, man, I can't even imagine. And so obviously after grad school, you ended up here. Now you're working with the Black Swamp Conservancy. So talk about that path, how you ended up in this job. And then, you know, why did their mission in particular resonate with you?
Yeah. So I was looking for jobs, you know, as you do, finishing up a degree. And I'm like, okay, now it's time. Like, I actually have to get a job.
The hard part.
Yeah, right. I have to finally commit. Like, you know, I was like 26 or whatever. Like, okay, it's time.
Real.
And so I was looking for jobs just in the area. I loved living in Vermont, but it was really far away from a lot of my friends and my family. So it was nice to be a little bit closer. Mm-hmm. My work with the Vermont River Conservancy in Vermont really inspired me to look for similar organizations. So similar conservation organizations that were doing similar things. And so this position opened up with Black Swamp at the same time that I was looking for jobs. So it seemed so perfect.
Yeah.
And I applied and they brought me on, which was really amazing.
Man, that's awesome. That's kismet for sure.
Yeah.
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 And so tell us then, like, your day to day. What are you doing?
I was going to say, it changes a lot, I feel, but
my day to day, you know, I asked that I will always remember I asked that question in my interview, you know, when they're like, oh, do you have any questions for us? And I asked that, what must my day to day look like? And they both just like laughed. They were like, there is no typical day to day. And now that I'm in it, like there is no typical day to day. So Black Swamp Conservancy is a small nonprofit land trust. And so essentially, our whole mission is to conserve and preserve land throughout Northwest Ohio. Mm-hmm. Our ultimate mission and goal is really to, through this conservation of these lands, is to improve water quality in the greater West Lake Erie Basin. And we do that in a multitude of ways. We do that through conservation easements. We do that through purchasing our own land and managing them as nature preserves. So right now we have about 13 nature preserves that we own and manage.
Oh, wow.
And then we also do some habitat restoration work. And so that literally looks like we'll purchase or we'll work with another landowner who owns land and wants to restore it. Mm-hmm. And we'll restore it back to natural habitat. So back to native prairie or into a wetland.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do a lot. We wear a lot of hats at the conservancy, and there is a strong 6 of us. We just hired a new marketing person, so there'll be 7. But
nice.
We're a very small staff, and so it takes all of us to make things run at the conservancy. We have about 165 conservation easements, and I'm on the conservation easement side of things. So I run and manage our easement monitoring program. Mm-hmm. And then work with all of our landowners that hold easements on their land. A conservation easement is...
I was about to say, might be dumb, but let's run it back a second.
No. sorry. Conservation easement is a perpetual land agreement that we'll write in conjunction with a private landowner. And that agreement is placed on their land, and it's there for literally ever. Can't really get rid of it. So if the property is sold or transferred, the easement will go with it. And essentially, the easement restricts the use of the property to protect the conservation values or the ecological values of the land. So yeah, so we work with a variety of landowners, from farmers to public parks and other entities to essentially just try to protect this land for forever. So like I said, we have about 165 easements now, and we've preserved over 22,000 acres, which is crazy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Especially when you're thinking of the size of your team, so small, like that's really impressive. So
yeah.
That's great. Do you have a favorite part of your job, of your day today?
I think, you know, I've gotten to see some really cool places in Northwest Ohio. As somebody from Western Pennsylvania, I didn't expect some parts of Ohio to be as beautiful as they are. So that's been really cool. I spend like half of my days out in the field visiting our easements. So as a part of our agreements, we have to visit the properties once a year. And so I run that monitoring program. We have a small group of volunteers that helps us with it, but mm-hmm. it's mostly me that's going out to the properties and visiting them, talking with the landowners. We also work with the landowners, so if they want to make any changes to the land, a lot of those changes will have to go through us, through an approval process. So I run that approval process, so landowners will give me a call or shoot me an email, request a change, and then I can kind of go through that with them to make sure that it's not going to impact the property or it doesn't go against the terms of their conservation easement. Yeah. So it's just been really cool. Like, I've just gotten to meet a lot of people, see a lot of cool places. And then our team at Black Swamp Conservancy is just so cool. I mean, it's amazing to be surrounded by such passionate environmentalists that are just, you know, really working towards the preservation of Northwest Ohio and improving
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And I have to say, for me and Libby too, it's especially fun to kind of hear about your day today, because sometimes we'll receive Snapchats from you where you just say, digging a hole outside, and we're like, what does that mean?
We really
what does she
do it all.
I just love it. And I think that's fun. You have a variety. You know, some days you're at the computer working on something. Other days you're out talking to people. Some days you're digging a hole in the dirt, man.
Yeah.
That's great. And I love that.
I truly never know what to expect walking into my office, you know, like – I could just have kind of like a mundane day, like clicking, clacking on my keyboard or making silly little maps. Or, you know, I don't know, I get a call that a tree is about to fall on somebody's house and they need me to come check it out and I have to rush over there, you know. So,
man, that's fun.
You just never know.
Yeah, it keeps it interesting.
Yeah,
you want to come tend to my trees and plants? Cause. But no, you mentioned a lot about how your coworkers are so passionate, similarly to you. And I think one thing that all of us as Gen Zers need to be is more passionate about environmental conservation. And so I'm wondering, from your perspective, what other Gen Zers can do? Like, what tips do you have for us to be more environmentally conscious?
I think there's just a few things. I mean, you know, there's the classic recycle or compost or whatever.
Right.
But I think the biggest thing is right now for everybody is, one, to just be aware of the environmental issues that are impacting your area and being willing to raise your voice, you know, write a letter to your local representative or whatever it might be, you know, be ready to advocate for those issues, since, you know, it is a global issue that we're facing. The other thing is that a lot of these conservation organizations like ourselves really rely on our community to get the work done that we need to get done.
Yeah.
And so for everybody, you know, being willing to donate either time or money if you have that available to you, is so appreciated. We run on donations and our volunteers. Like, we would be nowhere without volunteers.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, finding some way to give back to these local organizations that are doing the work. There's a lot of organizations doing the work on the ground.
For sure.
But just having the support of our community to get that work done means the world to all of us. So I think those are kind of, you know, those are like really the big things. I mean, yeah. It seems so small, like, you know, even the smallest little bits of just helping out an event or tabling something or, you know, sending a letter to your representative about how awesome some of the organizations are and
for
keep
sure.
the funding going just means so much.
Yeah, I love that. That's wonderful.
Well, you're here to hear, volunteer.
I know, right? I'm like, get out in the community, be environmentally conscious, please. But, you know, you, outside of your work, you're so well-traveled. You've had a lot of life experience. There is one part of your life that I do really want to talk about, and it's the fact that you are also a yoga instructor outside of your Black Swamp work, which I think is really awesome. Awesome. So, you know, talk a little bit about your journey with yoga, which I do also have to say, I love the connection of how much you love the earth and how you are so dedicated to the environment. And then also being a yoga instructor, it just feels like those two things just go so hand in hand.
Yeah, I definitely see those intersect, right?
Like, for sure.
You see that intersect a lot. Yeah, sure. My yoga journey started a long time ago. I was involved in some other athletic things throughout college, but my mom is also a yoga instructor, and she teaches at a local studio where I grew up, and she always was trying to get me to go to yoga with her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I finally gave in, and I went to a couple classes, and I really did love it, and I loved the community that was built at the studio. So when I moved to Vermont, I was really hoping to join a studio and just meet people. I was living in a brand new state and brand new community. And so while in Vermont, I had joined a studio. I was loving it. But then COVID hit and we weren't in person anymore. And so the studio at the time, the owner of the studio, she actually started a teacher training program virtually. And I was like, well, what the heck? We're not doing anything else. I might as well just get involved in this and, you know, spend my 2020 lockdown learning how to be a yoga teacher.
Right.
And yoga teacher training honestly turned into something way bigger than I thought it would ever. I thought it was going to be, how do I teach yoga? And I'm doing air quotes. I know you can't really see them, but teach yoga. But it really just helped me dive deeper into my practice and me myself, which was just like such a gift that I wasn't expecting at all. So since then, you know, I'm just about to wrap up my teacher training, my 500-hour teacher training, actually, which is insane, 500 hours. And I'm still teaching and involved with my same yoga community, but online. So, you know, we were doing some in-person stuff once the lockdown lifted, but then I moved to Michigan and now to here in Ohio. So I'm still involved virtually. I teach some classes online, but I also do teach sometimes for private groups or individual groups as well. So it's really cool. And, you know, I do see yoga and the outdoors like really overlap. And to me, they overlap a lot. So, you know, it's
yeah,
it's a
that
cool
feeling
thing.
Of being grounded. Mm-hmm. Right. For sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I think yoga is such a personal thing, too. I mean, I've gone to a couple classes where the instructors have been really like aggressive or kind of, you know, not very kind about me fixing my posture or things like that. And so I think what's nice about you is I have taken a class from you, and I think it's nice to see that you are very, you know, confident in your teaching, but also you take the time to help people in a way that's not embarrassing to them.
Yeah.
So that's always lovely, for sure. Do you have like a specific type of yoga that you like to do more than others? Are there any that you kind of think are, you know, that you could debunk, I guess, as being good yoga practices? What do you think?
For sure. So I was trained in Ashtanga yoga, which is a school or a lineage of yoga. And honestly, like practicing at home and getting to know my practice on a totally different level versus being in a studio and being so stressed about the people around me and if I'm doing the right thing, you know, practicing at home made me just like be by myself on my mat, just focused on whatever felt good in my body in the moment and not stressing if I was doing the right or wrong thing.
Definitely.
And I come from a kind of a competitive, like, athletic background. And so that was a really hard thing to, you know, kind of debunk in my head and like try to figure out why I'm not competing with other people. I'm just doing what feels good.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And so that's really been reflected in my teaching now. So I used to really love power yoga and hot yoga and like trying to get the best workout in.
Mm-hmm.
But really studying the practice and has made me come to understand that it's more than a workout, you know, like yoga is what happens on the mat and off the mat. And I try to translate that in my teaching. You know, I just really try to translate, you know, do what feels good in your body. Nobody cares what you're doing. I don't care what you're doing. You know, I don't really see myself as a teacher per se, but more as a facilitator in my classes. I'll give you suggestions. This is what I think we should be doing. But if that's not what you want to do, that's okay. If you want to lay down and close your eyes because you've had a long day and you just want to chill, sure, that could be your practice for the day,
right.
You know? So,
No, that's beautiful, though.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
I know. I'm like, I'm going to come take a class.
No, yeah, I think just trying to unpack that idea that yoga is a workout and more as this practice to help you ground and you feel the way that you need to feel both internally and externally to the world is the biggest thing that I think anybody could take away from doing any type of yoga education? I don't know. Yoga training.
For sure.
No, that's really beautiful.
Well, you heard it here, man. Chris, get ready. We're going to do a yoga class.
Okay, so I have to know, are you like a houseplant person? Obviously, you know, working outside.
You would think I am. I am so bad with houseplants. I have a couple that I've been able to keep alive. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, I just can't. I don't have a green thumb for inside plants.
Okay.
I do fair. Like outside plants.
Of course.
I do like, you know, I like to have a little, my little boxes of vegetables and flowers and stuff in the summer on my patio or porch for whatever home I'm living in at the time. I move around a lot. But so I do like outside, like sure. gardening, but my inside plant game is just not as it should be.
Honestly, sure. Same. I cannot keep any alive except for this one ivy plant I've had since I was like 17, and mm-hmm. we're still going strong.
You still have that plant? There's no way.
That's it's incredible. Doing great. Dang. She's thriving.
Look at you. You're thriving, actually. But no, I do have to say also, Ellie is a proud mom to a sweetie pie little fish.
Aww. I love my fish. His name is Finn. I won him at the Wood County Fair in August.
He's everything. He's so literally sweet. Everything.
He really is.
So he's... maybe not plants, but fish for sure. Good oh, yeah. fish
proud
mom.
Fish mom. He I has the that. Personality of a large dog. Like, I don't get it. It's very strange.
Ellie's in the kitchen making dinner. He's hanging out with her.
He does. Aww. If people walk into our house, he, like, greets them. Like, he gets so excited when people walk in. It's very That's strange so behavior.
He would jump out of the tank if he could, I swear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so before we get to our favorite part, Roman Empires, I want to know what advice you have for anyone, you know, young professional just starting out or anyone who wants to get into conservation.
Just in general, you know, take your time. I think there's so much pressure after undergrad to like find the job and do the things and do what you got your degree in or whatever it is. But that pressure is like so arbitrary, you know. So I think my biggest thing is take your time to get to where you need to do. Try mm-hmm. different things out, move different places, try new things, because you never know. Like, I never thought I would be a field girly. Not in a million years did I ever think I'd be outside hiking around doing the work.
Yes, field girly.
I know, but now I love it. Like, I couldn't imagine my life without it, you know. Yeah, and so. Yeah. And I wouldn't have known that if I didn't have that opportunity when I was in Vermont and tried it for, you know, a couple months. So,
yeah, for sure.
And then I think, especially in the conservation world, you know, just get involved with organizations and, like, get your feet dirty and don't be afraid to do that, literally.
I love that. That's so cute.
Yeah.
So, okay, really quick before we get to Roman Empire, I do have to shout out Ellie because when Libby and I were coming up with the idea for this podcast and talking about what we were going to do, Ellie was the one who suggested that because it is Gen Z oriented, we do the Roman Empire segment. So quick little claps to Ellie for
yes,
giving us this idea
you.
That we love so much.
You're the mother of our Roman Empire. Mother.
But now you are in the hot seat, ma'am. Now it's your time.
Turn.
You know what? You dug this hole for yourself.
I know.
And you
I
can
know.
Jump in.
I so. Can't believe it. Like, I can't believe I actually have to answer the question I came up with. This is crazy.
And in the spirit of that girlfriend, you're going to start us off today.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I've been thinking about this all week. Let me clarify. I've been stressing about this all week.
Okay, right. As one does.
Yeah. But I think My Roman Empire is both the trend and now the TV show, Is It Cake?
Yes.
Y'all can't see our executive producer, Chris, but he is excited about this one.
I loved the trend when it was on, like, TikTok and Instagram. Every single time it came up on my feed, I was like, I don't know, is it
right?
cake? Like, and every time it was cake, I was shocked.
Yeah. I found myself screaming out loud alone, like throwing my phone across the room.
Yeah.
There's no way some of those things are cake.
No way.
There's just no way.
There's no way. And now the TV show hosted by Mikey Day. So funny.
Shout out Mikey Day.
Like,
The only it's man so who could good. Legitimately host that TV yeah. show is Mikey Day, actually.
It's just so, I cry so much in that show. Like, there's no reason for me to bawl my eyes out, but, like, I do. Like, everybody's just so kind and supportive and so talented.
I was about to say, for clarification, for people who haven't watched the yeah. show, she's not just crying about the cake. No. There's, like, actual heartfelt emotional right, yeah. moments.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, especially once you get towards the end when people are being, like, they have to go. And oh my gosh, like, I'm like, no, you guys are all so good, you all win, like, aww. Why can't you all win the $25,000 or whatever it is?
Right. I love that. Hey, that's a great answer, you nailed
thanks.
It
yeah.
you did great.
All right, and Libby, okay, now heading over to you.
It's my turn. So it's interesting that we brought up the fish as pets, because I want to talk about my pets today. I have two bunnies, Clover and Jude, and they're the best thing ever. I love them so much.
True. Can confirm. The best thing ever.
They're such sweeties. They're so funny. And, like, I think people don't always realize that bunnies have such big personalities. Same thing how you're saying. It's, like, they kind of more so resemble cats to me than dogs. They're, like, kind of, like, standoffish until they want you. Mm-hmm. But they're just such sweetie pies. And they're so much fun. They brighten every day. And I would say to anyone who wants a pet, get a bunny, but do your research.
Real, yeah. I was going to say, Libby has a wealth of knowledge about bunnies, seriously.
Yeah.
And I can confirm her bunnies are the cutest ever. And they love each other, too, which is so sweet. They love to cuddle.
They love cuddling and like, cleaning each other.
Yeah.
And they, like, share snacks and stuff. It's adorable.
They're very cute. Jude looks like a little punk rocker with his long hair.
Yeah.
And Clover's just the princess of the castle.
She's
let me tell you.
She's such a princess. So sad.
I love it. So, my Roman Empire, you guys, I picked this specifically for Ellie Schiappa. So, here you go. First of all, this is one that I've been wanting to talk about for a couple of episodes, but I picked it because of a recent conversation that I had with Ellie. So, first of all,
oh boy,
Chapel Roan.
Oh my gosh.
If y'all don't know Chapel Roan, let me put you on.
Yeah, right.
You should.
You're wrong.
She is. The moment, she is everything. I think a lot of new artists sometimes kind of get washed up in the TikTok trendy, you know, like really trying to hone in on that like stereotypical pop sound. Chapel Roan legitimately is like revitalizing princess pop and like that excitement that you feel from listening to like feel good music that is meant for women but everyone can appreciate.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean? I mean, it's definitely a girls, gays, and theys kind of moment. However, for everybody involved, they can appreciate Chapel Roan's music. So I unfortunately am not talking about Chapel Roan's music though. I am going to talk about a quote from Chapel Roan at Coachella where she looked dead in the camera and she said, "I'm your dream girl's dream girl." And that has sat with me for so long. I went to Coachella, so I did see the whole Chapel Roan moment. But I will tell you, that quote is crazy because it's true.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like literally all of these people out here with dream girls, they love Chapel Roan. They don't love you.
Yeah.
They love Chapel Roan.
Yeah.
Okay?
Iconic.
So let's be so real about it. But the other part of why I brought up Chapel Roan is because she did just post a TikTok of her kind of demonstrating how she trains, quote unquote, for her tour or for, you know, her Coachella performance, because there is one particular song where she just kind of is running and frolicking around the stage, and that's a lot while you're singing. So she posts this video, and I swear it was Ellie in the video.
It was crazy.
I mean, there was one moment where she looked up at the camera, and I was like, oh my God, that's Ellie. That's not Chapel Roan. That's literally Ellie
Schiappa. I totally see it.
Yeah, no, right? Even me watching it, I was like, wait, how did I get there?
She was so taken aback. Ellie was like, that's my face. Like, what am I watching
it
right now?
It was very disconcerting.
Yeah. It was very disconcerting. Yeah. But also, highest compliment, because Chapel Roan is your dream girl's dream girl.
Yeah,
and
oh my gosh.
You look like Chapel Roan. So there you go, babe.
Seriously.
Love that for you.
I love it.
Well, thank you so much again, Ellie, for joining
thank
us.
You.
We had so much fun chatting
yeah,
with you.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
We want to thank Ellie Schiappa, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen to us again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcasts. Bye, besties!
Bye, besties! We'll be right back.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.